Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
I was adjusting my seat there. It wasn't going up all the way. Welcome into the post-2021 NFL Draft edition of the Shout Buffalo Bills Football Podcast. I am Matt Parrino, joined as always by Ryan Talbot. We are going to get into all of our thoughts now with, you know, plenty of time to digest the first 2 days. And then what Brandon Bean did today, I thought was, you know, some really interesting decision making in terms of how they structured the first part of the draft, how it fell to them, the decisions that they made, and then how they followed suit on day three, adding two more offensive linemen, two defensive backs, and a wide receiver who it seems like as of now projected to be in the battle for a kick returner. Ryan Talbot, let me bring you in before we get too much into the draft itself. The UDFA market has opened. Where are we at with that? And not as lucrative, I guess, as most years for the Bills.
Yeah, you know, Buffalo's roster is pretty loaded from top to bottom. So I think a lot of the top undrafted free agents were looking for teams where there were more opportunities to make the roster, which is understandable. That's a big part of, you know, sticking on these teams across the league is finding those places where you're going to fit best. So to date, they've agreed to terms with five different players. Now, mind you, one player could wake up tomorrow, have a better deal on the table, and until it's signed, they can change their mind. We've seen this happen before, not just with the Bills, but across the league. But right now, five players. I don't know who the top name necessarily would be, but they did sign a tight end out of Bowling Green, so someone that maybe some fans here in Buffalo are familiar with. They are in talks, or one of the teams that's really interested in Shane Simpson, a running back out of Virginia that could make a splash on special teams if he signs here. He has the return ability. So there's a sixth player that's possibly signing, but he has interest from other NFL teams as well.
Yeah, and I saw you tweet that out that, you know, there was a lot of interest around him. I think that's, you know, interesting enough, you know, all of this talk about Travis Etienne and, you know, potentially a running back in the draft. I think it's going to be a real uphill climb for any running back that tries to get on here because you had the two guys at the top. They brought in a veteran in Matt Breida. You've talked about how much they like Antonio Williams, which I think is right on the money. And then this is the summer of Christian Wade. Finally, after all of these years, we're going to really get a chance to see how far he's come. So, you know, to your point earlier, I put up a post on Syracuse.com because Brandon Bean actually talked about this. They anticipated this. It's actually what motivated Brandon to trade back, you know, which, you know, that's not usually his forte. He's made his name on trading up and being aggressive. He moved out of that second, fifth round pick, picked up an additional sixth round pick. So they picked three times in the sixth round. We'll get into all that. But he did that because he wanted an extra chance to get a player that he wanted. They had a lot of similar grades in that range on players. And he thought, okay, we're going to struggle to get undrafted free agents to come in here and compete because there's not a lot of roster spots available. Let me draft a couple guys that I know I can bring in here and force in here, basically, and we can get a look at them. Because I was talking about this in Cleveland with Josh Reed and Thad Brown. you know, Josh made the point, like, you know, at some point you got to kind of cut it off, because how many guys can you bring to camp? And I kind of play devil's advocate. I still think they want to bring these guys in because, you know, given the chance that they find a Dane Jackson, you know what I mean? Find a Levi Wallace, or a couple of years ago, a Robert Foster, an Isaiah McKenzie. I know that they brought him over from Denver, a Cam Lewis, who we'll get into that as well, the cornerback situation. But I think that they want to get as many guys in here as possible to get in their program, take a look at them and see, you know, nobody thought Delshon Phillips was making this roster last year. So until we get to cut down day, anything's possible.
Yeah, anything's possible. Reggie Gilliam last year, undrafted free agent signing, made the roster. You know, last year the Bills made a big splash. They signed Trey Adams, who everyone thought was one of the bigger names available after the draft. He obviously didn't make the roster, but was on the practice squad. You know, you kind of nailed it in terms of what Brandon Bean said. Trading down gave us an extra player, extra pick, because we knew that some of these players in undrafted free agency weren't going to come here. So they still get a chance to evaluate another player. I thought they had some really good picks in round six and round seven in terms of experience, in terms of fit, in terms of ties to even to this roster and other players. So I'm sure they had some extra due diligence on some of these players. So it's going to be interesting, but yeah, it's going to be hard to make this roster. You know, you alluded to the running back position. You're going to have to be really good on special teams if you do join this roster as an undrafted free agent, because they obviously like Moss. Moss was looking like he was on the verge of almost being that lead back last year. You have Singletary, who has put in a lot of work this offseason, work on finding that extra gear, Antonio Williams, Christian Wade. And then they signed Matt Breida as a free agent too, to the vet minimum. So there are options here, and I'm not going to say there's not a path for an undrafted free agent, but it's going to be tough.
Let me get into something else too. We're going to break down all these picks. If you're just hopping in here, thank you for joining us on this Saturday evening. The NFL draft is in the books, and we have a couple months to dive into all the position battles and the depth chart breakdown and all that kind of stuff. That'll be fun. But one thing that I saw on social media that I wanted to address when we got on the show was, you know, people taking issue with this draft because with the argument that the Bills didn't get better, their roster didn't get better from Thursday to Saturday. And some people even arguing from January to today, to Saturday. And I take issue with that only from the sense is I think you can really scan through the position groups and find places, find arguments that can be made to where this is a better roster in 2021 going into the draft. And I think that they got better on the defensive line in the draft. I mean, we talked to Brandon Bean today about, you know, Gregory Rousseau and Carlos Basham Jr. again. After he, you know, spoke in detail about both of those guys after he drafted them. And he basically said, these are long-term plays, no doubt about it, but there will be a defined role for Rousseau and Basham next year. He anticipates that they're going to be a part of the rotation. If you look on the offensive side of the ball, Emmanuel Sanders, in my opinion, and we talked about this in one of the free agency shows, I think that he is a market upgrade over John Brown. For several factors. Number one, he has had some of his biggest games in some of his biggest moments. And that type of production is infectious. That type of experience, you can't replicate that in a room. And so I think getting him in the building, his work ethic, his kind of passion for the grind, I think that that's going to really rub off on a lot of people. And I think that that just takes this offense to the next level. I think it's why, you know, they didn't force anything. They didn't have to force anything at wide receiver, because for this year and this year alone with some of the, and I know we can talk about 22 and 23, Cole Beasley, Sanders will be moving on. What do you actually have in Hodgins and Gabriel Davis? All those are fine arguments. But if you want to talk about getting better as a roster, and because they didn't take a wide receiver, that's a faulty argument for me, because in terms of 21 right now, this offense as constructed right now is better, I think, on paper than it was a year ago.
Yeah, it's better because of the additions that they made. It's better because these younger players are going to develop another year further. It's better because you're getting players back that were lost to injury, such as a Cody Ford, who they have high expectations for. They're expecting big things. Like I said, the continuation of a career with a guy like Dawson Knox, with Ed Oliver. Young players get better each year in, year out. And if they don't, well, then eventually, you know, you do have to cut ties with players. So not every player, I shouldn't sit here and say every player gets better as the years go on, because that's not the case, but they're depending on a lot of these younger players to get better, to compete for not just the starting roles, but to become more dominant, to take on that bigger role, to help the Bills kind of close the gap on the Chiefs and on some of these other teams in the AFC that now their rosters have gotten a lot better and they are a legitimate threat directly to Buffalo. So yeah, they've added a lot of talent in the draft. They added a lot of talent in free agency, and then they still have a lot of youth that's just going to get better and better.
You know, I think that this offensive line too is all of a sudden a real strong suit. I think you could really, you know, depth wise talk about, you know, where they go 1 through 10, 1 through maybe even 12, and put it up against almost anything in the league. I really like the depth that they've had. I know some people wanted to see some interior additions. You saw that later on in the draft, they pick up Jack Anderson from Texas Tech, who I think is a very underrated signing, a guy that's played, you know, big time college football for a few years. I'm interested to see what that'll look like. He's a pretty big boy, not as big as the other two, but at 6'4", I believe, 320, 330. That's an intriguing addition that I think that they like. I asked him about his resemblance of Richie Incognito Jr. and he said that he's been known to be called Little Richie from time to time,
which is great. Little Richie just itself is a fantastic nickname because of the singer and everything else, but he does look just like him. It's pretty unbelievable. But yeah, and that's what I was talking about with really liking some of these late picks. The last pick, you add someone that had, I think, 30 plus starts in his college career. Someone that when the draft was on, they were talking about how fundamentally sound he is. Someone that gets all the aspects. So maybe he's limited in some areas, but he has the experience that the Bills like. The fundamentals are solid. There's a shot there, not necessarily to make the 53-man roster out of the gate, but to be on the practice squad, to develop, to get better. And then maybe if there's an injury or something happens, he gets promoted, he gets that opportunity, and he shines in that role. You just never know. But when you can get players that have draftable grades in the final round of a draft that supposedly was thin because of all the players that went back to their respective schools, it's impressive. You look at the wide receiver that they added. You are the one that tweeted it was a great catch right out of the gate, that Chris Trapasso had him as a third round pick to the Bills in one of his mock drafts. So to get someone in the sixth round that some people thought could go in the third round is mighty impressive too.
Yeah, let's get into some of these picks here. We'll start at Tommy Doyle, who is a freakishly huge tackle. I mean, and you know, on top of what they did with Spencer Brown, and I know there was some, you know, confusion, I think, amongst Bills fans. Okay, I thought you just got this guy in Spencer Brown. You come back and you kind of take a swing again. Tommy Doyle, Miami, Ohio guy, a little bit less athletic, I think. Maybe not less athletic, but he's a little bit less he's a little bit stiffer as a prospect. I think that one of the big knocks on him in his scouting reports is that he struggles with his bend within his blocking motions. And so that's something he's going to have to work on. But Bobby Johnson went to Miami, Ohio. He went to his pro day. He talked to people around campus, and he's just going to fit in with, you know, what they want to do in their program. And I think their mindset going into this draft, a draft that, mind you, we talked about this, was there were a lot of questions about the quality of the information that was available to these teams. So what did Brandon Bean do in response to that? He took a couple of swings, three or four, on really traitsy projection type players. And I think that you can do that in a draft like this when you believe as much as you do in your program and the coaching staff. And a cool thing for a lot of these offensive linemen they drafted is they're coming in to a situation in 2021 with no pressure. I mean, they're returning all of their starters. And when I say all of their starters, I'm talking about six players who started games for them last year. They're starting day one offensive line, projected to be Dawkins, Cody Ford, Mitch Morse, Darrell Williams, and John Feliciano. I mean, that is a really strong offensive line coming out of the gates. I think you upgrade potentially if Spencer Brown can come in and get comfortable right away. Just his youth, his energy, his athleticism, you probably figure that that's an upgrade over Ty Nsekhe. And that's not saying anything negative about him. He was great in the time that he played for the Bills when he was called upon. But how much could you get out of him? I mean, he's going to be 35 this year. And so I think, you know, with the addition of a guy like Forrest Lamp, who I think is really intriguing as an interior depth piece, and then Jack Anderson, Tommy Doyle, Spencer Brown, like we mentioned, you have so many different things that you can do, so many different varieties of player.
And we've seen this happen. The Bills just load up an offensive line, free agency, the draft, and then there's two, maybe three players that Brandon Bean can even trade during roster cutdown time. Russell Bodine's an example of a player somewhat recently that he traded away and was able to get a pick for. So you look and you look at Bobby Hart, for instance. Bobby Hart signs in free agency. Everyone expects him to possibly be in the running for the swing tackle. He still could be. Don't get me wrong. But now you have Bobby Hart, you have Ryan Bates, and you have Spencer Brown. Brandon Bean said it today at the post-draft presser. You know, Spencer Brown could be one injury away from starting. Well, you're only one injury away from starting if you are that swing tackle. You're that next man up, so to speak. So there's high expectations there. So then you go to Tommy Doyle. Oh, Doyle rules, by the way. I just have to drop that in there.
I gotta ask you, Ryan, did you get that tweet out? Because I saw that you mentioned the O'Doyle. Did you get that out before the Bills did the meme that they put out?
I'm pretty sure I did, but I'd have to go back and check. I mean,
I'm just going to say that you did, and they ripped it. It's okay. No problem.
Well, it's so anytime you see the name Doyle, you have to go O'Doyle rules, though. No, I know. But what's interesting is both of them have that relative athletic score that is just off the charts. Doyle was a 9.9 out of 10. So there is athleticism there, but the bend and everything that you mentioned, those are things that you can work on. If you can fix the minor issues and you have that player, that dancing bear, as I called them when we did the chat on Twitter earlier today, if you can get those guys that are moving and can move, they're 6'7", 6'8", 315, 325, whatever it may be, and they're just bulldozing guys, getting to the second level, and they're that athletic, the Bills could be set up here for a long time because they already have Deion Dawkins locked up at one spot for the foreseeable future, long term. Darrell Williams is here for the next 3 years if he plays out the contract. Obviously, the Bills usually work those outs into it. As of right now, there's absolutely no reason to end his contract early. Don't get me wrong. He was outstanding last year. But they have that they can work in. If you need to free up some space, now you have some options that you can develop, bring along. But you're one play away from getting in there if you're Spencer Brown and Tommy Doyle. You know, there's a legit shot for him to make this roster and for a guy like Bobby Hart to suddenly get traded somewhere to a team that is looking for a swing tackle and they're looking for a veteran that has experience, because Bobby Hart does have that. He's been a little underwhelming when he's been on the field in his career in Cincinnati and I think the Giants before that, but yeah, this is the beauty of what Brandon Bean does every year. He brings in an influx of talent across that board, and then he tries to move a few of those extra spare parts, so to speak, for draft picks in the following drafts.
Marquez Stevenson is a really intriguing pick, especially where they got him, the value that they got him, because I don't think he factors in offensively this year. There's some questions about his route running. I think he needs some time to develop. I think the landing spot for him here behind Nicole Beasley could work wonders. I mean, we've talked to Isaiah McKenzie tons about what it's meant to be able to sit back and learn behind Beasley. And I think that will help Stevenson quite a bit. But in the meantime, he can kind of throw his hat in the ring, you know, in terms of the competition for kick returning duties. I know we've penciled in Isaiah McKenzie into that role, but there's a reason we use pencil. You know, he had that nice punt return last year, but the few kick returns that he had in the Miami game, they weren't monsters by any stretch. And that was a big piece for this team last year with Andre Roberts. They can find some consistency there with a guy like Stevenson that can add some value with that. I like that. And I also think, I don't know if you noticed, Isaiah McKenzie had a tweet today, which was very interesting timing.
Palm, right?
He had the face palm emoji, because in a lot of ways, this is a guy that replicates the skill set of Isaiah McKenzie. And this goes to the point. I think somebody said it in the chat here. Brandon Bean is going to, at every turn, bring in a player to push whoever's got dibs on a position. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, Mario Addison, that was a big topic too. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Or we could even talk about it now. But, you know, Mario Addison was asked about, Brandon was asked about his role this year. And he said, he's still in our plans. Even with the money that could be saved after June 1st, you know, they want to bring him back because of the impact that he has on younger players. Even, you know, bringing over Afiadoba, Obada, right? Obada? Mm-hmm.
Obada.
Yeah, I always say Adoba. I don't know why I got to figure that out, why that's always my first thing to go. They were talking to him and he said, Mario Addison's impact on me was career altering. And you think about what that could mean for a Gregory Rousseau, who I know is going to get some top notch mentoring from Mr. Bruce Smith, it appears, but you know, to get some as well from a guy in the thick of it, that's had some success in the league. I think that that's a big deal.
Yeah. And maybe Brandon Bean is just saying that today, and in the back of his mind, he knows it's a legitimate possibility that Mario Addison could go at some point in time on this roster. But that's the same for any veteran on this roster. If young guys emerge and play well, that's just the circle of life in the NFL, so to speak. But Addison helping F.A. Obada and developing him during their time in Carolina together, and seeing that Obada in his first year without him gets 5.5 sacks and it gets better and better. That's intriguing, knowing that you now have two young guys on this roster that you want to bring along, and you have Addison and you have Jerry Hughes. And then you also have younger voices that can help him out. AJ Epenesa, in terms of, well, here's what I did as a rookie. Obviously his year was so much different than a typical rookie's because of the fact that there was no off-season trainings, OTAs, mini camps, things like that due to COVID pandemic being at its height at that point in time. But even a younger voice can help these players out. Going back to Stevenson, yeah, I think there's a direct path for him here as a kick returner. Set a record at Houston, 3 kick return touchdowns in his career, and the 3 actually happened in the last 2 years, so it only took him 2 seasons to break that all-time record. Very explosive, a Swiss Army knife, so as you said, kind of can replicate that Isaiah McKenzie role if the Bills really want to. Now, that being said, McKenzie came back on a pretty agreeable rate. So I think that he makes this roster unless other players step up, like an Isaiah Hodgins, like someone that's a little bit different, because you can probably stash a Stevenson if you have to, or you can just simply say, well, he's the extra wide receiver spot that Andre Roberts was, because the Bills kept, I think it was 7 last year, it was really 6 wide receivers, and then Roberts, who was your primary kick return, punt return man. So unless someone that has a different skill set, a different build stands out, I think both guys are safe this year. But long term, that's probably their plan to replace an Isaiah McKenzie.
If you're just joining us right now, thank you so much. This is the Shout Buffalo Bills Football Podcast. Hit that like button on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel. We're almost at 2K. Ryan, how awesome are these people on YouTube? Almost at 2K. I think we started this channel right in the middle of the playoff push. I want to say around the Baltimore playoff week. Episode 100 was one of the first ones. I think we're already up to 135. So it's been a busy off season, but we're grinding and we love it. So if you can hit that like button, hit that subscription, share it on all the other social platforms as well. We'll be back this next week. I'm hoping to book Chris Trapasso. He owes us that post-draft edition. I'd like to get into that and obviously talk a little bit about Marquez Stevenson and his thoughts on the draft as a whole. But, you know, I want to get into the secondary, because a lot of Bills fans were waiting patiently day after day for the cornerback position to be addressed. And, you know, I want to give you guys a little insight into that. But it came up in Brandon Bean's press conference today, and he was basically asked, like, okay, and we can also get in running back too, because I thought he had a good quote on that. So remind me in the chat if you'd like us to get into that. He basically talked about, you know, we were considering cornerback at a couple of different spots. And I think we talked about this on day one. The problem is either a player went that they liked, that they had maybe a similar grade on to somebody that was, you know, that they selected, went a pick or two, or maybe a few picks before they drafted, or when they got to the pick, the next cornerback down just wasn't high enough to consider taking over the player that they did. And the way that he talked about Boogie Basham and how high of a grade that they had on him, I don't think cornerback was ever in play there, and a trade down was never in play either, especially hearing him talk about the value of trading down and adding assets. I think that gives you kind of some insight into what they thought about Basham in this scenario. And, you know, he also talked about something else. You got to understand the inner workings of the organization and the inner workings of the coaching staff and what they ask their cornerbacks to do, what they want them to do. Like, they're not going to be on the front lines going out and trying to get a JC Horn or a Patrick Surtain or a shutdown corner, like a Paulson Adebo even, who's, you know, we talked about his press man skills. That's not something that Brandon Bean and this coaching staff is really coveting. They want a guy that's going to come in here, be physical, be dependable, that can tackle. And that's like a big piece. And they go out and they get Rashad Wild Goose with their third, sixth round pick, one of the coolest names ever. and I'm sure we'll see the Top Gun memes for weeks and weeks. And then they go back to the well. Ryan, this isn't breaking news. Brandon Bean has shown the path back to Carolina many times since he got to Buffalo, bringing in players from there. Well, they had some success with a young man named Dane Jackson, and he specifically talked about him today. Well, he brought in his college teammate. They grew up together. They lived down the road from each other, basically. Damar Hamlin, safety from Pittsburgh. So they go defensive back, two straight picks in the sixth round. What were your thoughts?
Well, yeah, first and foremost, a lot of these little storylines are so interesting to me. So you already mentioned it with Hamlin, grew up with Dane Jackson. They've known each other since they're about 7 or 8 years old. They go to the same college. They go now to the same pro team. You go back to Marquis Stevenson, Ed Oliver's roommate at Houston, his mentor, Trey White. So little things like that are so interesting to me, and they kind of blow my mind in terms of all these little matches. And even when you look at a Wild Goose there, Wild Goose, it's such an interesting name that I have to double check every time I say it now. Even when you go back to, didn't he say that he was related to Elvis Dumervil?
Might have said that. I missed it.
I'm pretty sure he did. It's all blending together right now. I'm pretty sure he was the prospect that said that. So good bloodlines. All these little extra storylines intrigue me. Starting with Wild Goose, really athletic, really good closing speed, good tackler. A lot to like about him. Again, this late in the draft, getting someone like that. That's the one thing that the athleticism maybe hasn't been off the charts for. Levi Wallace, it's been okay. It's been solid. Dane Jackson, there's limits there athletically, but when he had the opportunities last year, he really flashed. This is someone that has the athleticism that could, if developed properly, come in and make an impact. Hamlin, I like his game as well. So both of these guys are in the mix in terms of depth roles. They obviously have to do their part in OTAs, training camp, et cetera, preseason. But even if they don't make it on this roster, because it is a loaded roster, as we mentioned, these are guys that you can hopefully stash on your practice squad. And I know Bills fans panic about it every year, like, oh no, this player is going to get claimed. This guy's going to go. This one's going to go. And I think last year, one Bills player ended up getting claimed after cut downs, and then they were able to pretty much bring everyone back that they wanted to. So it's okay if some of these late draft picks do not make the roster this year. That's why Brandon Bean moved down to add the extra capital to get some of these players in here, because he wants to develop them, knowing that they might not make the roster, but you can probably still stash them on this practice squad.
Yeah, and now you go back, and this is the fifth draft of the McBean era. The fourth draft for Brandon Bean. Obviously, Sean was here with Doug Whaley the first time around. And you look at the defensive backs that they've drafted since they've been here. Obviously, they started off with a bang. Tre'Davious White, the first pick of the regime before Brandon got here. Then they come back the next year. Taron Johnson, who I think as a fourth-round pick, you know, has started a ton of games. I think that you can consider that a hit, especially considering the big play that he made in the playoffs last year. And, of course, the regular season one against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Saran Neal, who has been a special teams stud. And if you could find a player like that on day three, like they did in the fifth round in 2018, I think that you take that all day. We don't know much about Jaquan Johnson yet. Mm-hmm. They took him in the sixth round in 2019. So we'll learn more about him as we go along. And then last year, Dane Jackson. So the track record here of drafting defensive backs, and even some of the guys, the undrafted guys that they've had, and the veteran cornerbacks, that's a position group that I feel like this regime, Sean McDermott more than anybody, has a really good grasp on. And it's not one where I feel like they have to overextend themselves to try to draft high, because they're usually going to bring in a couple people whether it be veterans, whether it be some of these undrafted free agent guys that come in and end up shining in camp. I mean, we could get to camp and have a real problem on our hands if you're Dane Jackson or Levi Wallace, if Rashad Wild Goose comes in here and has a similar type of impact early on as even a Dane Jackson did last year.
Yeah, and I think I just read that the Bills signed another cornerback out of USC, Griffin, as an undrafted free agent. So, and he's Warren G's son. Look at that. There's a there's a interesting factoid for you. So, yeah, they seem to have confidence in a lot of the guys that they bring in, that they sign, that they add after the draft, that they can truly develop them, bring them along. But you and I were talking about this on our last show. There are veteran cornerbacks on the market. I'm sure there's veteran safeties. There's no reason to worry right now, because if the Bills feel like they lack a certain veteran in a certain room, positional room, they can still go out and sign that veteran and tell them, listen, you can come in, you can compete. Nothing's going to be guaranteed or given to you, but come on in and compete for that spot. So there's still options out there, because like you said, where's the cornerback? Where's the cornerback? That was the claim. And it would be interesting to go back and look round by round to see who were some of those players that maybe were taken right before the Bills selected. One that comes to mind is Sean Wade. Sean Wade was taken one pick before the Bills. The Bills had met with him multiple times via Zoom. They had some interest in him pre-draft. Now, I don't know for a fact whether or not that he was going to go the next pick to the Bills, and I want to say that was their first fifth round pick, not the one that obviously they tried. Yeah, it was in fifth round right. That Wade finally went. So maybe there, I don't know that for sure, but you already mentioned it. Round two, Carlos Basham Jr. was the guy. They had a deal in place with the NFC team, and they told that team, they said, well, listen, if one player is there, we're not moving out of the spot. And he was that one player. So definitely not there. Definitely not round one. They wanted Russo. They were high on Russo. So that leaves, you know, round three, which I think that they really like Spencer Brown. So now I'm just wondering, maybe it really is just a case that there was no situation on day one and day two where they said a cornerback's our guy. And then they opted for another position. Now, maybe in round one, had Newsom been there at 30, then it could have been a difficult decision. But for the most part, I just think that the Bills went with the draft board, and they're very happy with the results.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, stick around here. We're going to get – I want to talk about another couple things here, running back. Another thing I want to talk about here is the Senior Bowl. And I want to get into our grades. Like, I want to grade the entire draft, both of us give a grade, get into some of our big takeaways or some of the big reasons why we gave the grade. But let's start with the Senior Bowl, because next year, Ryan, the Bills could be, you know, plotting their way to a Super Bowl potentially. I mean, they have the roster for it. They went to the AFC title game last year. I think that they're in the mix in the AFC, no doubt about it. But whether or not they're going to the Super Bowl, we're taking that week off, because we're both, if we can do it, going to the Senior Bowl, because Brandon Bean in this front office, that's their lane. They like to live at the Senior Bowl. Boogie Basham, Spencer Brown, Tommy Doyle, Demir, I forgot it, Hilton. The list goes on and on. I mean, the majority of this draft class was at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, I asked Brandon Bean about that and why it was so important to land those players, or why, you know, they came away with so many Senior Bowl players. And he said, listen, we had a lot of tape, the one-on-ones from that week, all the stuff that happens in the press practice setting, the ability to sit down with those extended interviews. So if you take the entire process, right, the guys that are at the Senior Bowl, you're going to have more access to them than you will anybody else during the draft process, because you start those interviews that week, you know, right in January. So yeah, this continues to be a huge event for the Bills, and they really cleaned up from that Senior Bowl roster. I'm still waiting for Jim Nagy to come out and really have his all Bills Senior Bowl team.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And I'm trying to think maybe about last year, but go back all the way to the first year of Sean McDermott. Even before Brandon Bean gets here, there was Taron Johnson. There was Saran Neal, both. Oh, no, that actually might have been the Josh Allen year with some of them. I'm trying to think now. But, yeah, Taron Johnson, Saran Neal, Josh Allen, Harrison Phillips. I believe these guys were all players that were at the Senior Bowl. I think Zay Jones may have been there. And, again, that was McDermott's first year. Our boy Nate Peterman was a Senior Bowl player. But the list,
boy?
The list goes on and on and on in terms of they've looked at those players and they've drafted quite a few of them. Last year may have been one of the first years where there weren't many. It may have been very few. But even in some of these undrafted free agents that fall through the cracks, I think there's been a few cases where you've had a Senior Bowl player mixed in here and there. I think Levi Wallace may have been one, in fact.
Cool little nugget too here is that, you know, I know a lot of people wanted Sean Wade, but I might argue that his versatility is less so than I think you're getting in Rashad Wild Goose, who went, you know, plenty of picks after him. And Wild Goose is faster. And I think that's, if you're talking about one of the knocks for me on Levi Wallace over the years, it's been a lack of closing speed, because he is a pretty sure tackler most of the time. But it's about getting to the play and making the play and being reactive. And I think if you have a little bit more quickness and speed, I think that positions Wild Goose in a really nice spot to get into camp and to make an impression early on. So just a little, you know, tidbit there that I think is interesting. They brought in a cornerback, albeit in the sixth round, a cornerback, a defensive back with some speed. So that's pretty fun. Let's get into the running back discussion, because great question by Sal Capaccio. He basically asked Brandon Bean, like, there was a lot of smoke around the running back position last week, or this past week. The Travis Etienne rumor that started it on Monday. We put up a full show on basically on that, and the engagement on it was something significant. So, by the way, speaking of engagement, smash that like button and hit that subscribe button on YouTube while you're here. We really appreciate it. And he said, listen, we liked some running backs in this class, and enough to where he wouldn't have shied away from a first round draft pick. They really had a grade on Travis Etienne. Now, I am hesitant to think that they would have had Etienne graded ahead of Gregory Rousseau with everything we've learned about how much they coveted not only the player and the production, but the measurables. And those kinds of players don't come along very often, especially in that range. You know, I feel like the Boogie Bashams of the world are much more prevalent year to year than the Gregory Rousseaus, who just come with just unbelievable length and size and all the physical attributes. Brandon Bean basically said it, like, you know, I would draft a running back in the first round, but it comes down to, you know, where your board takes you. And I maybe looking, depending on how this thing shakes out in 5 to 10 years, and who knows what the careers will be of Najee Harris and Travis Etienne, but maybe the Bills will, you'll look back as a Bills fan, even if you were team Etienne. And by the end of things, I was all aboard that train. I thought that would have been, you know, if some of these pass rushers were gone, I thought that would have been a really smart way to go. I think you'll look back on this draft and maybe be a little bit thankful that you didn't have to make that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, heart goes out to Marcel when that pick was made. And then actually not when the pick was made, later that night when the press conference there after the draft, and Urban Meyer says that Travis Etienne is going to be their third down back, that they have Carlos Hyde and they have Greg Robinson. Greg Robinson, really, really talented, by the way. Undrafted free agent, went for like 1,300 yards last year. Is going to be like their 1-2 punch, and then you're going to bring in Travis Etienne on third downs. He shared that one really funny video of the guy that goes up to the window. I think it was like of a flower shop, and there's a cat in there, and he's like, "I'm going to get you out of here." I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Maybe I'm just rambling at this point. But it's a really great little video that gets shared on Twitter from time to time. Go to his timeline, you'll find it. Pretty much that Brandon Bean's going to try to get ETN for free, or freed from Jacksonville. And he was joking about it, of course. But yeah, peculiar pick by Jacksonville, depending on what they already had there. But probably a good thing that he wasn't on the board at 30, because I think there would have been a lot of upset Bills fans if they would have gone with Rousseau had ETN been there.
Can we call Trey White Maverick? I think that's great. I feel like if Wild Goose earns himself a start, that will be my first question to Tre'Davious White in that week's press conference. So you don't worry yourself at all. All right. So let's get into our grade now. We're 40 minutes in. I want to spend, you know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes on this. You know, I've spent some time with it. Like, first and foremost, let me get into just the ideology of a post-draft grade. It's silly. You're grading a collection of players that haven't played an NFL down yet. I know it's about, like, you know, you want to measure a team's needs going into the draft with what they versus what they came out with. And I think you can put a letter grade on that, but we don't know how these guys are going to fit in 2021, you know, how they're going to play for the next 4 years. And I think you need that entire body of work before you place a letter grade on something. But we live in 2021. We live in the social media era. We gotta put a grade on everything, or a list or a take or something. So we will. I'm going to give them at the time right now a B, with a caveat that if all of these projections somehow find a way to materialize and develop, I'm giving them the room to maybe go as far as an A, maybe even A+. If Gregory Rousseau, to me, this draft comes down to one thing. If Gregory Rousseau turns into a premier pass rusher, and when I say a premier pass rusher, I'm talking about a guy that ranks in the top 15 in pressures, a guy that can get maybe sneak in to the top 10 in sacks or be around that number year in and year out. You know, Ryan, I went back and looked at Aaron Schobel because I wanted to look at when Bruce retired to when, you know, current time. I forgot how consistent Aaron Schobel was, turning in double-digit sack numbers, you know, pretty consistently. I think he had a year here or there where he didn't. But, man, I forgot all about that. So kudos to Aaron Schobel. My bad. But, you know, Mario Addison came in here, or Mario Williams came in here and had a couple good seasons. You had Lorenzo Alexander with that kind of one-year explosion for 12 and a half sacks. But, you know, Bruce Smith was right on the money, and that's why I put up a story on it today. They put out if you haven't seen the video yet, Bruce Smith recorded a video of himself talking to Gregory Rousseau and how he's talked to the Pegulas over the years since Sean and Brandon got here, and said, that's the one thing we're missing. Like, I want that big dominant pass rusher. And, you know, Gregory Rousseau, whatever you think about him, I think just the size alone and the age and the rawness to his game, there's a chance. And if he turns into that, for me, no matter what anybody else in this class does, this draft was an A+.
Yeah, I was going to go with a B as well, so I'm going to stick with the B grade that you also had. Listen, it wasn't a sexy draft, okay? I get it. The skill players were not selected in the first round, in the second round, in the third round, in the fifth round. They went D-end, D-end, O-tackle, O-tackle. But you need those big uglies on your team. You need those players that can come in and make a difference, protect your quarterback or get after the quarterback. And the first two picks that the Bills made, they're depending on those guys to develop and be able to get after the quarterback. Anyone that watched the AFC Championship last year saw that Patrick Mahomes, with it, multiple injuries, especially a bad injury to his toe, had all day to throw for most of that game. No pressure, no heat, just playing toss out there with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and friends. And that's why the Bills could not stop them at all in that game. So now you address that. If Rousseau, like you said, develops, or Groot, as he likes, or as he's known as, then that raises the grade. If Carlos Boogie Basham ends up developing, whether it's as a starter opposite him, whether it's being a third rotational man because of you still have AJ Epenesa here as a young option, then that helps raise the grade. You have Spencer Brown, who unbelievably off the charts athletic, and to get, I think he's better than some of the tackles that went before him in this draft class. Now, mind you, when teams add these tackles, they're adding them based on the blocking scheme that they have. So that happens every year. But I think Spencer Brown could end up being one of the better tackles in this draft class. You could look back and be like, man, that guy, talent-wise, athleticism-wise, could have been a first-round pick. I think year one, he's your swing tackle. He beats out Bobby Hart. By year two, he could push Daryl Williams for that starting role. And that doesn't mean that Williams's career in Buffalo is over. It means you could kick him to guard. It means a lot of different things, but I think he's in play and that would raise your grade. And then, you know,
it could also mean you trade him.
Yeah. Like,
that's another thing that people are forgetting. That's what Brandon Bean has done time and time again, is he's turned players that even play well for him into draft capital and future draft capital. I mean, I know people don't like to look back at the Wyatt Teller trade with fond eyes because he's turned into such a great player in Cleveland, albeit with some great coaching out there in a situation that was right for him. But, you know, you turn that into a fifth round pick. If you trade Daryl Williams in a season or two after he continues to play at a high level, and you turn that into a second round pick after you sign him for nothing when no other teams really even wanted him. I mean, those are the kinds of moves that, like, really, really good franchises make.
Absolutely. And year in, year out, you can do that if you have the talent there. And then you look at Williams's contract. It's not a massive amount of money for a really good offensive tackle. So, yeah, he's a player that you could trade, that you can move around. I did just see something in here that I wanted to address about him. Eric Space. I have a friend in Iowa, and he says, scuttlebutt out there is the Bills may turn Brown into a tight end. That scuttlebutt is balderdash if we're throwing out some great vocabulary. No, they're not turning him into a tight end.
Bro, I got to tell you right now, you saying balderdash, I've never met a word that fit a person more completely. I think that you need to work in balderdash at least once per episode moving forward. Love the you know what? I forgot. My wife got these really killer Friends coffee mugs. I'll introduce that next week on the show.
Nice. Yeah. No, you're not taking that guy to turn him into a tight end. Now, could you make him eligible on the line? Yeah, we've seen that with Deion Dawkins. We see them do that with a lot of offensive linemen. And if he's as athletic as advertised, sure. But no, you're not developing him. Someone actually asked me about the fifth round pick, saying, do you think they could turn him into a tight end? No. They want these guys to be offensive tackles. They want these guys to be contributors on this offensive line for years to come. I would be shocked if you're taking someone that's coming in, rolling in at 324 or 308, whatever the case may be, and say, we want to get you down into tight end shape. No, it's just not happening.
All right. I'm tweeting out our show right now with the hashtag balderdash. So I don't ever forget that you use that word.
Awesome.
It's great. Really great stuff. All right. 45 minutes in the books. I think this was a good wrap-up show. We're going to be back next week, hopefully planning a pretty big show for Wednesday night. If not Wednesday night, Thursday night, Cam Greasy asking about Dawson Knox. Keep that fresh. Ask on Wednesday. We'll get into that for sure. Hopefully we can book Chris Trapasso. I was even talking to John Scott tonight. He might come back in and join us. Thank you so much. What a great couple of days. The draft is always this unbelievable haul. I was talking to great fan of the show, Matt Harmon, I believe, on Twitter. And he was like, I was listening to your podcast last night, and you guys just sounded absolutely shot, exhausted. And I was like, it is, man. It is a grind and a haul, because that first night the Bills picked at 30. I was up until 4:30 in the morning, sleep for 5-6 hours, get back. You're right back at it again. And then you come back for the real long process of Friday night, and then it's a full day Saturday. So, but you know, it's a labor of love. This is fun. We love jumping on here with all you guys. The chats have been great. It's been a fun time.
Yeah, it's been awesome, and it is a grind. Matt, I think, has been going to sleep later than I have, but the first night was just 3 hours for me because I took the kids to school, got up nice and early, tried to nap a little bit later that day, didn't work out, but you know, we'll rest up here. We'll be ready for Wednesday or Thursday night with our next episode of Shout.
All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Get some rest. Have a fun Sunday, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Take care, everyone.